Okay, so is it morning or afternoon? Good afternoon, everyone. I'll get some of the preliminaries out of the way while some people are still filtering in, but I wanted to get, we have a lot of information in this session, and unfortunately there's too much information and to be able to pass everyone in the given hour, but we're always available after the session as well. I just want to tell you that. We have some business contact information up in the back or up front here as well. So if you have any questions, by all means, contact us, myself or Chris. So first of all, I just want to get a little bit of a sense as to who we have in the crowd here. Technologists, maybe raise your hands. Management, sales type individuals. People that are here for holiday. It's funny. I went to, I had a... My wife and my three-year-old, we came down last Wednesday, so I got to come down, went to Disneyland. Got a good joke for you guys that I'm going to let you guys take back home as well. So, heard of that. Anyone take in Disneyland this year before? Awesome. Had a great time. So, does anyone know why Tigger bounces all around the 100-acre woods instead of walking? Anyone know? He didn't want to step on poo. Yeah, I've been to a few sessions, and no one, I haven't seen any actual jokes, so I wanted to lead one off there. Yeah. You don't have a three-year-old, do you? Okay, so as I said, we have a lot to go over here. Quick agenda. We're going to do an introduction. I'm co-presenting with another individual here, and we'll get those introductions out of the way in the next slide here. Going to go over a company profile. This is really a solution that we put into a company. They are, I guess, the third largest parking management services company in North America, so I'll get a little bit into that information. Give a little bit of a snapshot as to what they had before, what they looked like before virtualization, the challenges, the drivers, the business requirements, all that fun stuff. I'm going to be doing that. Then I'm going to be turning over the presentation to Chris, and he's going to talk a little bit about the solution, the design that we implemented, some of the benefits. We did have some... I was hoping to be able to fit in an AVI presentation as to the actual failover, but that doesn't actually fit into our hour. So if you have any specifics, again, feel free to contact us and give you a little bit of a summary. And if I could actually, for questions, if you could actually remember your questions till the end, just because we want to keep this presentation moving effectively. And we're wanting to stay probably about 10, 15 minutes of worth of questions at the end here, so we want to go through this pretty quick. Okay, so intro. I'm Mike Gower. I'm an independent consultant. I started my own company 2 years ago, and I've been doing virtualization implementations, Citrix implementations, Microsoft, high-level Microsoft architectural work as well. And got the various certifications, VCP, the Citrix, the Microsoft again, Cisco. So kind of a hat of all trades that I do, and I'll turn over to Chris.
Can you guys... hear me okay here? Is that right? So my name is Chris Fraser. This is my third VMworld. So far it's been my best. I'm with Longview Systems. We are a IT solutions provider with a focus primarily on infrastructure. Our customer base is mainly located in Western Canada, Western North America. Also on Monday, we were awarded 2006 Partner of the Year for Technical Achievement by VMware. It was a very exciting moment. I was responsible for doing all the technical architecture, technical implementation, all the low-level technical details of the virtualization end of the project here.
Okay. Just one other quick question. Who has NetApp filers in their environment?
Ooh.
Who is looking at implementing network compliance? Okay, so what we're hoping to, you know, at some point you can only get so technical in a presentation of this length. So what we're hoping for is to give you a little bit of information as to how this company implemented a disaster recovery solution using network appliance, SnapMirror specifically, and VMware ESX for the virtualization layer. And it's we go into a little bit more detail on that as well. Okay, so just a little bit more background. I was actually, as an independent, Imperial Parking didn't have the expertise to be able to pull this off themselves. So I was actually brought in to help architect, kind of engineer, and stage, do a little bit of project management work, as well as do the design, help select a partner, and get the solution into play here. And give you a little bit of background about Impark. Impark is not up there where the arrow is, where you see there. We're actually over here, so a little bit of confusion on the slide there. We're not that cold in Vancouver. Like I said before, Imperial Parking, they are one of the, I guess they're the third largest parking management company in North America. They've got a lot of offices, a lot of spaces, parking spaces, and they pull a lot of tickets. They do a lot of ticketing as well. I don't like that aspect of them, but for the pretty much, and the head office, as I said, it's in Vancouver. Who recognizes this? seriously, though, when I go into an organization, it's always kind of a mixed bag, and you may be either you may tailor yourself into the proactive or the reactive. You're in one of two groups when you go into an IT organization. Medium-sized company, for the most part, a mixture of NT4 and 2003, unfinished project. I'll talk about unfinished projects as far as a constraint throughout this presentation as well. Mixed bag of everything, though. They were pretty much a Microsoft shop, ran SQL, ran Oracle on Windows, Citrix Great Plains, all the file print, that kind of stuff there. The biggest talking about some of the user requirements, this project was actually brought together by another consulting firm who kind of did the big picture. This is what you want to cover off. So business continuity was one of the big things. And with this company, growth was also very important to them, as well as being able to support these new initiatives. So new owners, new business owners came in, purchased the company. And previously, some of you may be in this area there where sometimes the business does not like to invest into IT heavily. This is just the opposite, where the business realized, you know what, we have to be able to invest in IT to make sure that they're enablers for our business. Limitations, success by heroic effort. So this is no change management in the organization. They have to support the existing infrastructure. Documentation. You know, if they had it, if they had time, maybe it was documented. And I would say development environment and testing and staging. They were really undeveloped as far as that goes. Who has in the audience? We got a lot of techies in the audience there. So who has a desktop that's acting as a server under the desk? Show of hands. Okay, everyone else is liars. So this was the challenge. I had to come in here and figure out how we were going to get rid of all those systems, all the specialized servers that they had, so BlackBerry servers, Exchange OS servers, all these specialty systems where you see when you go into data centers and you see all these servers racked up in here. You know what? We don't need these 38 or 40 servers. Let's get rid of all these old hardware, the old hardware that you're paying for as well. Why am I paying for support on a 6 or 7 year old hardware? You know why? It's because they were scared to be able to move that over onto new systems. Lack of documentation, again, lack of expertise. Recoverability was another big piece there. CEOs from New Orleans didn't have to sell them on DR. That was pretty self-explanatory for him. Again, I'm talking about working within an NT4 and a 2003 environment, and like any other organization, power and cooling, when you're looking at this data center was at capacity for cooling and power. Okay, we talked a little bit about the being able to support new projects, the corporate growth, reliability and agility. We didn't really have to do a lot of talking with getting VMware, I guess, at the business level bought into. So this was one of the things, this was a key strategy that we were using for implementing our solutions. The biggest piece that we really had to do was figure out how we were going to do this DR, this disaster recovery. The other piece is that we got to revitalize the technology, so we didn't have to worry about the 6 or 7 year old servers. We didn't have to worry about the mix and match of servers. There's a combination of Dells and HPs. We wanted to standardize on one platform, get in the management tools, not have to worry about training their 2 or 3 IT staff that were going to be responsible for this. Okay, and I just have a little bit of a preamble as well. I want to check my notes, make sure I don't forget there. But before getting into the solution here, I talked about when I first came in as well. I actually worked to develop a RFS, request for solution, and we put together, you know what, we need storage, we need asynchronous replication across wide area network, the servers must be manageable, we want to be able to integrate the management of all the systems, not have to worry about looking at 3 or 4 different consoles to figure out what's going on in the environment. And you know, getting back to the last key requirements, one thing that I wanted to touch on was our selection. So we were doing this project in January, was it, Chris? We started. Okay, so January, February was the time frame we were looking at this. So unfortunately, ESX3 was not implemented at this time. So this environment, we don't get too specific into the versions here, but this is actually a VMware ESX2.5 implementation running on fiber channel as opposed to iSCSI. So if everyone's aware of why, you've taken a lot of the prereqs for ESX3, and we just couldn't move to that direction. So I'm going to turn the floor over to Chris, and he's going to get into the design and some of the solution that we did there.
Thank you. So we proposed a solution that was based on VMware ESX, obviously, HP servers, NetApp fiber channel-based storage, also included a systems management component using Altera's deployment server in their server management suite. And in the end, our proposal was selected, accepted. There was some further negotiation on price, but we got all the sort of details worked out. Why did Impark select Longview Systems? Well, we delivered a proposal that met all their needs, met all their requirements, and was the best complete solution that was in the selection process. So we also demonstrated that we had deep and broad expertise in all of the different technical areas, and we showed Impark that we would be a great partner going forward, not only during the course of this project, but outside of the project in terms of ongoing support, operations, and helping them grow their IT on top of virtualization. So servers and software. We started off with a virtual infrastructure starter kit, 4 4-way VINs and a PDV starter kit. So it's an ESX 2.5 SKU, so it's no longer available. 4 HP ProLiant DL585 servers, the Opteron dual core processors, one of my favorites, and also a DL385 to handle all the management functions. So this is running Virtual Center, also running the Altera server management suite, and some of the other management tools. Storage we put in place was the NetApp 3020HA. Fairly robust piece of gear, let's just say. 2 terabytes of storage. That's 2 terabytes at each location, right, Mike?
Yeah.
So 2 terabytes at each location. HP storage works for backup at each location. And our replication is based on the NetApp SnapMirror technology. So this is kind of a high-level picture of the infrastructure we put in place. The primary site is the Impark data center, or the Impark the data center located at the Impark head office in Vancouver. The failover site is housed at a co-location facility in Calgary. We have 2 ESX hosts in Vancouver, 2 in Calgary, 3020HA in Vancouver, 3020 in Calgary. We've also got the management server running in Vancouver, which manages and monitors both locations, We decided not to implement a mirrored management server at the Calgary site because we didn't want to have a lot of hardware that was sitting there and just spinning. That was one real key thing we wanted to avoid in this kind of a disaster recovery scenario. So we had a couple of techniques for being able to fail over the management server to the remote site in case the Vancouver location was going to be down for an extended period of time. And we've also got a staging server here. This is meant to be our P2V migration swing server. Also gives us a bit of a sandbox for testing ESX upgrades or other patches, configuration changes, anything like that. This will likely be the first victim once the migration to ESX3 begins. So you'll also see here we've got our classifications described here, gold, silver, bronze. I'll talk about those in a minute. But basically, we went through and classified all of the physical, soon-to-be virtual machines in a couple of different categories. We could have done tier 1, 2, 3, but we did gold, silver, bronze. It made it a little bit easier for the business and the operations guys to assimilate the priority of it. Because the company is new to storage like this, the company is new to virtualization, so we wanted to make it very, very easy for them to operate the solution. So now that we've put all this gear in there, you've got to be able to operate it, you've got to be able to manage it, you've got to be able to monitor it. So we've got HP Systems Insight Manager taking care of all the low level hardware monitoring, collecting SNMP traps and such. All the ESX hosts have got the Systems Insight Manager agents on them. They all also have HP Advanced ILO. One key goal here was to get as close to a pure lights out model as possible, and Advanced ILO is critical for that. We've also got the Altera server management suite, including the very excellent deployment server. It made building this, testing this, rebuilding it again, rebuilding it, super, super easy. Concurrent to the virtualization implementation, we were also able to offer Impark, one of our methodology consultants, and he was able to assist them to move their IT operations group from a firefighting kind of approach into more, or basically down the road to ITIL. So it's not something that happens overnight, adopting ITIL, but he's laying the groundwork, building service catalog, all that kind of stuff to help the business kind of have a bit better conversation with IT. The co-location site, we wanted it to be a warm co-location site. We didn't want to be have a whole bunch of hardware sitting there cold. So we've actually designed the solution so we can use the co-location facility, the hardware that's in place there for doing dev, testing, training, anything like that. If we do need to fail over our boxes, obviously all that dev, test kind of stuff goes away and sits on the shelf. So our approach, Mike talked about there being a fairly healthy number of old servers, desktop servers, legacy systems. The business decided that they didn't want to base or build any of their new initiatives on these legacy systems. So this meant a complete infrastructure refresh. Some of the physical servers were... We took some of their physical servers and saw that maybe they didn't actually need to be P2V'd, and so instead we provisioned net new virtual machines. A couple of examples of this were taking a bunch of their physical SQL servers, consolidating them onto a one or two SQL virtual machines, brand new build based on a standard template, Windows 2003, all that kind of good stuff. We also did a similar thing with a bunch of their web services. So SharePoint server, a couple of IIS web servers. They also had a Citrix web interface. Is that right, Mike?
The entire Citrix infrastructure is virtualized there.
Yes. And then, of course, we've got a few of the systems that are poorly documented, incredibly critical. And those we used, we P2V'd those boxes using either the VMware P2V Assistant or Mike Laverick's very excellent Ultimate P2V tool. Mike's not in the audience today, is he? So I talked about our categorization of the virtual machine. So these basically map to resource profiles or resource settings within Virtual Center. They map to alerting settings in Virtual Center. Also map to a couple of different configurations on the storage end of thing, and also map to the replication interval. So gold was deemed to be the most highly critical application. So these machines are intended to be returned to operations in case of an outage within an hour. And that data replicates across the WAN link, E100 WAN link between Vancouver and Calgary. It replicates every hour. Silver stuff goes nightly. The silver stuff is still very, very important, but the business decided that return to operations within maybe 4 hours was reasonable. We've also got the bronze servers, which are production but non-critical systems that the business could do without in case of a major outage. Bronze is not replicated at all right now. And there are strategies to either rebuild the VMs at the remote site or just do without them to a large part. So we, on the storage end of things, I'll talk about that for a little bit here. We configured each virtual machine with its own flex volume. I don't know, has anybody been through the NetApp white papers on adopting VMware ESX? So they recommend that you have a one virtual machine to one LUN ratio there. The main reason for that is that when you're doing, you're all familiar somewhat with the NetApp replication? Maybe, yes? I'll talk about it for a minute here anyhow. So with the NetApp replication, when a replication is triggered or when a replication is scheduled, there's actually a snapshot of the data taken. And then the filers replicate that over the WAN link. So you've got a read-write volume in production at your primary site being replicated over the WAN link to a read-only LUN that's at the DR site. Now, when you want to do a failover, the volume at the DR site is converted to read-write. You register your VMs, you power them on, you go back to work. The key thing here, though, is that this has to be done a LUN at a time. So if we had a lot of virtual machines sharing a single LUN, and I've done deployments where people, you know, have much larger LUNs than just one VM, you end up having to fail over all those virtual machines to the DR site. And that was maybe the business didn't really feel that was acceptable. They, there is a little bit more management overhead managing all these individual LUNs, but it was shown to be, you know, not too much on a day-to-day basis. There is a little bit of extra effort involved in the initial implementation, but once the configuration has been established, it pretty much stays. So we went with the one VM to one LUN configuration here. Each NetApp Flex Volume is a VMFS LUN. Hosts all the virtual disk files for each virtual machine. So each VM has got a C drive for the system, D drive for the application and data. Some of them may have an E drive. To some degree, that was, you know, in some cases a legacy from the PDV migrations. So we also had a few systems that were transactional in nature, like SQL, Oracle, that kind of stuff. So we mounted those on RDMs. Anything else you want to say on this, Mike?
Nope. Stop stealing my thunder.
So granular control was a really big thing in terms of the failover here. We wanted to have the option to fail an individual virtual machine over. Maybe, you know, we had some data corruption. We wanted to go back to the data for the last hour, something like that. So that was very critical for us here. One great thing about the NetApp replication is that once your baseline has been established, only the change data goes over the WAN link. So you're not replicating these giant blobs every hour over your WAN link. And future considerations, Mike.
Oh.
So I'm going to talk to the future considerations point here in a second. On the disk storage end of things, one thing that we found was in a lot of cases we had things like page files, spool directories, all that kind of stuff. Fairly high degree of change, but not the kind of data that we wanted to replicate across the WAN link. So we've got a bunch of the virtual machines now that have a separate page file volume, they've actually got a print server where we've redirected the spooler folder, and we place those volumes on the bronze storage. So, if we do need to fail the system over, then we can simply reestablish a brand new page file. Definitely not data that needs to go over the WAN link there.
Yeah. Do you want me to interject on that?
Yeah, sure.
So just on the future considerations, when we first implemented this solution, we had to, as I was saying, we were actually implementing, what was the ONTAP version? That was 7.7.1.2, I think, is what we implemented on the filers themselves, and ESX 2.5.3. So at the time of, Chris alluded to the RDMs and the SQL and the Oracle. So right now what we're doing for our replication, everything's actually being handled by the NetApp. So that may be in it for ourselves as well. Little alarm bells were going off as far as being able to get consistent replication across the wide area network. So the biggest future consideration that we are doing, besides looking at scripting a lot of these and giving the control to the virtual machine to control its snapshot, is NetApp is also going to be releasing and I think I cleared this with NetApp as well, is that they're going to be releasing a snap manager for virtual machines. The release date has not yet been advertised, but that's one thing that will make these, consistent as far as that goes. So,
one more point that I wanted to make there was when the business needs to add capacity or grow the infrastructure at one location, they definitely have to grow that infrastructure at the other location. And this actually kind of ties back into the adoption of some ITIL best practices, because now there is a very clear cost attached to scaling the infrastructure. So you're kind of cutting down on those ad hoc, willy-nilly requests to just buy a whole bunch more storage kind of thing. So storage breakdown here. So we decided to segregate the storage, gold dedicated to one filer, silver and bronze dedicated to the other filer, just trying to distribute the load and offload some of the replication load. Both the filers right now, with the number of VMs we have on there, are not working that hard at all. So at one location, if we lose one of the filer heads, there is absolutely no problem with one of those heads carrying all the gold, silver, bronze load. We also do have the option of failing all those VMs over to the remote site. So we've got a couple of different layers of failback there, or fallback there. Oh, wrong button. A little bit more detail here. So you can see here that we've got one big LUN for our bronze stuff, hosting a whole bunch of virtual machines. Our silver is one LUN, one flex volume, a couple of VMDK files, one virtual machine there. That's our BlackBerry server, SharePoint server over here in a similar situation. The gold is very, very similar to the silver in terms of its configuration and the storage topology. Again, one VM, one LUN, one flex volume. We also have a couple of database applications over here, Oracle, SQL. And in that case, we're using raw device mappings. So the raw device mapping data is a tiny, tiny amount of data. And once it was replicated once, because it never changes, it hasn't had to be replicated again. Right now, the organization hasn't fully put these systems into production yet. They're slowly migrating their databases over, and part of that is actually because we're waiting for the SnapMirror client that supports ESX. Do you want to talk about the network here, Mike?
Sure. So just a little bit about the network. All I've done here is shown the Vancouver data center and the Calgary data center. They are configured almost identical as you were seeing about the infrastructure layout previously to this. What you don't see is the 40 locations that are surrounding the data center. So combination of branches accessing the data center through a private network, as well as through the other half, through the internet, through VPN connectivity. So one of the things with the co-location site that we were doing, so it is co-managed, we made sure that there was a private link in, we made sure that there was an internet link in, really just duplicating the VPN ability as well for the branches. The other key piece here, you'll see the virtual center server. The one server, though, that we do have that's different is this guy right here. It's a domain controller. He is virtualized, and he is sitting on a bronze volume in Calgary. So one of the things I wanted to be clear about for the gold, silver, bronze, Vancouver gold and silver, they're replicated across to Calgary gold, silver. So we can't use that disk space. That disk space is allotted for failover. Because we're not replicating bronze, we have all this disk over in Calgary that we can make use of for things like training, things like test development. You know, it's just, you know, you can have any type of access methodology you want to get to those systems, whether it be through Citrix or whatever, to make sure that the clients are happy with the access. The Calgary domain controller is used, it's in the domain, it's hosting DNS, it's hosting DHCP, and I'm going to get into a little bit more about the solution and what are some of the things that we, some of the gotchas that you may run into when you're starting to look at something like this as well. Again, everything is actually purchased. The management wanted to keep things really, really simple, so even though we didn't need to go with the same type of filers at the other location, we decided to keep everything the same, so we have the 3020s in each location, and the brocade switches, and even the ESX servers. So one of the things too I wanted to say was the gold, as Chris was saying, is hosted on the first primary ESX server. Silver and bronze are on the second server. On that DL585, 32 gigs of RAM, we're running 30 VMs right now. It's not even sweating, really. You know, we're going to run out of memory before we run out of capacity on the server themselves.
Do you also want to talk about the management server failover strategy there, Mike?
Sure. The management server as well, the database is a SQL 2005 database. It is SAN attached, and it is a silver. It's considered a silver, so it does fit outside the scope. It's the only server that's connected that is not a virtual machine, and we are replicating that nightly as well to Calgary. So in the event of a failure, if we did want to bring up a virtual center server in the case of an extended failure, we could actually build up a virtual VM connected to the database and restore our virtual center.
We could layer on all the management tools there.
Exactly.
So the databases, yep, and all the data and actually all the VMX files are replicated over the WAN link. We have some scripts that copy the VMX files from each ESX server and store them on this replicated volume on the virtual center management server.
So how are we doing for time here?
It's getting a little tight, I think.
1:30. So we've got, we're pretty good, actually. This is where I would normally play the AVI files. What I do have is a scenario and script that would take a failure from a Vancouver virtual machine, bring it over to Calgary, play with it, because you know what, when you're failing over, you are using that Calgary information there or the DR location. The question is, okay, well, I want to fail back now. How do I do it? And that's where a lot of these solutions fall down. And one of the nice things about the NetApp, and I'm just going to go through a quick thing here, and unfortunately I can't play the AVI file here. But really the basic steps, I'm actually going to look at the summary. Yeah, I covered that off as well. The basic steps in the summary is after you've configured your gold or your silver virtual machine, you're going to actually initialize the snap mirror. So you do a snap mirror initialize, and this is also a white paper on the VMware site. They don't go into as much detail, but if you have any questions, again, feel free to contact us as to how we did it, and we can help you out there. But you're basically getting ready. You do an initialization. This is assuming you've done a baseline as well. This is what creates that baseline. You create your schedule. So in this case, we're using the network appliance to schedule the replication across. On a failure, all we're doing is we're going over to the Calgary filers, the DR filers themselves, performing a SnapMirror QS, a SnapMirror break. We're bringing the LUN online, because remember that LUN is actually in read-only mode at that Calgary location. Bring that LUN up, go over to our ESX servers, do a rescan, because obviously the ESX servers cannot see that volume in LUN until you actually publish that to the ESX servers. Register the VM. Chris was talking about we've scripted the copying of the VMX files, so all we're doing is a register, a VMware register, and the virtual machine is registered on the Calgary systems, and we power it on. Okay, that's all nice and good, Mike, but you know, you got a copy of something that has a network ID that is in Vancouver. Now you got something in Calgary. What we did, this is a separate network. We didn't extend the Vancouver network to Calgary. It's a fully routable network. And what I wanted to do was be able to not have to worry about all these IP address changes and everything like that goes to that. So we used a little trick. Everyone's familiar with DHCP. You can do MAC reservations. So that's what we did. We did MAC reservations. We actually modified all the gold and the silver VMX configuration files. So there's three areas there that we modified. You know, by default, you create a system, it'll automatically generate that MAC address. You can change it to static, so you make a little, get rid of that generated address, remove that line, add a static entry in there, and basically what we did was we took the IP address of the Vancouver, and you know, it could just be any type of calculation, but you're basically converting the IP address into a MAC address. That's all I did for Calgary. So MAC addresses were kept the same. There's also an entry that you can keep the UUID, so you can say UUID keep in the VMX, so when you bring it up, ESX servers are going to say, well, hey, it's a new VM. What do you want me to do with the UUID? And it comes up with the same MAC. That Calgary domain controller here, he has a DHCP scope for that MAC address, but he's going to give that server that's just failed, you just brought it back up, a new IP address on the Calgary. And obviously, the only thing that you really have to wait for then is for the DNS to replicate. So you've got some your clients themselves, they're still going to be trying to reach, let's say, for example, this guy failed here. They're going to be going ping, ping's not around, it's not around, it's not around, it's not around. Oh, timeouts. I'm going to query the DNS server again. It's going to point me to the right IP address. There are tweaks that you can do to speed up that process. You can either do the tweaks on the clients, you know, their DNS cache timeouts that you can set. Do a search on the Microsoft sites for those registry entries. You can do a query for, bear with me for a second. I want to get the DNS cache timeout for positive responses and DNS cache timeout for negative responses. Those are some things that you can look at as well if you wanted to test this. You can set it so that it will always query the DNS. Obviously, you've got to be careful about that too. You don't want a lot of traffic up on your network. And I think that was it for our... we do have the ability to... one of the things I wanted to show you was that once you have brought the system back up with the network appliance, all you do is reinitialize that mirror. You don't have to baseline copy that system again because it says, hey, you know what? There's already a baseline in the Vancouver office, so I'll just reestablish that mirror and I'll just sync the changes back. So when you want to change or fail back, all you have to do... power off the system nicely in the DR location, do an update, basically force a resync, bring the system back in Vancouver, repeat the process, and it's really just time. So our goal is we're looking at for this situation here, we can have a system up, we're supposed to have it up within an hour. DNS is easily allowing that cache timeout is set so that it's going to be brought back, the clients are going to be able to do that.
The actual failover process takes almost no time at all. And yep. The DNS is the real, probably the slowest part of the whole failover process.
Yeah. When I was doing the demonstration, the failing over in the recovery was taking about 10 minutes, but that was actually going through and documenting it. So actually, you could probably have about 40, 50 systems brought back up online, probably within an hour if you're actually doing a lot of systems. So it's actually a very good system. So just to summarize here. Calgary is a warm site. It's used by training, testing, development. Separate network, talked about. This is a big piece right here as well. All your locations obviously have to be able to fail over to that Calgary DNS in the event of a full failure, data center failure.
Again, the branches, DHCP scopes to include that Calgary server as well. Tunnels, you want to make sure, this is all that I'm saying here, is that you're making sure that the Calgary is routable by all your clients. Static MAC addresses we covered off, MAC reservations we talked about. And really, this is the big thing here. This kind of got us in one sense because we ran into some applications that developers hard-coded some IP addresses to. So that's a no-no when you're actually implementing this. These are some things you've got to be aware of. You want to be able to use the fully qualified name. I'll pass the next slide over to you, Chris.
Alrighty. So this is what we've achieved right now after 6 months into the implementation. We've got 23 virtual servers, not including the dev test environment, so there's actually a fairly healthy number of net new VMs that have been provisioned. We've migrated the services of 6 physical servers on a new core VM, so this is the SQLs, this is the IISs, consolidated onto brand new virtual machines built using a standard template. 9 of their physical boxes have been migrated using P to V, and overall, there's 30 or more. This includes production, development, test, training environments. 30 virtual machines are direct hardware replacements. So there's $370,000. It's not my phone. it's 370 grand Canadian in cost avoidance. So probably about $15 American, something like that. So the production infrastructure right now is running NT4 and Windows 2000. The business saw that they needed to get off of these platforms, but there was such a high degree of risk attached with the legacy hardware they were on that these were a real priority to get virtualized. And so we're actually virtualizing them so we can keep them in production for a short period of time and then decommission them. The rest of the production infrastructure, we've got file and print, IIS, SQL, Oracle, domain controllers, other custom line of business applications. Citrix is running on there. They do run a small Citrix farm. We haven't run into a lot of the traditional issues with Citrix on ESX 2.5 because it's really only servicing a fairly small pool of users.
We're good, actually. That's why.
Yeah, well, the other hat that I wear beside VMware is Citrix, so... our plans for Virtual Infrastructure 3, well, before we could adopt Virtual Infrastructure 3, I actually wanted to come down here and collect a whole bunch of great tips so I could take them back and make sure their VI3 migration was going to go smoothly. So timeframes we're dealing with here, we're going to pilot HA and upgrade VC Q107, get some insight into how the new features of VI3 are going to impact our existing failover and failover process and all the recovery and operational stuff. We also, let me back up here. One reason why we're pushing the VI3 implementation off into the next calendar year is we wanted to let the dust settle a little bit here. Company's new to virtualization, so we wanted some time for their engineers to get up to speed on virtualization. We wanted them to be able to finish their P2V migrations, and we also wanted to leave some time for the new operations model, the ITIL-based model, to get implemented and get some of the bugs worked out there. So. Probably not all going to be done by Q107, but we'll keep on pushing them. So later in Q1, we plan to migrate to Virtual Infrastructure 3. By then, who knows what version will be out? 302, 3.1? Anybody? Just to summarize things here, key benefits, almost $500,000 Canadian in avoided costs or savings. So the solution paid for itself within the first year, probably almost within the first 6 months.
Yeah.
We achieved a good degree of server hardware consolidation. The business now has business continuity. They didn't have it before. The governance model is being implemented. They're doing their best to get away from a reactive type of support model, and they're having a reasonable degree of success with it. We've got standardization of systems and processes. This is partly virtualization. This also goes back to adopting some of the key pieces of ITIL. And the business is now in a much better position to support new initiatives. So this includes growth, acquisitions, any kind of stuff like that. And overall, the full potential has not even been realized. I mean, the servers are running quite well, but there's definitely not a significant load on there. They could scale these up to be have run quite a few more VMs, and someday I hope they will. Just a couple of references here. NetApp has a few excellent white papers on the website. If you want a little bit more background, I recommend that you check them out. Thank you very much.
And
question time.
Yeah. we did pretty good. About 15 minutes.
I'll start over here.
When you were setting up the ones and dimes, there was no mention of Q-trees.
No, the Q-trees are in there. So I am, honestly, I'm a virtualization guy, and I worked with our storage team, our systems management team, to get this whole solution implemented. But we did hand off a lot of the low-level storage details to one of our storage engineers. Oh, I'll go here.
Let's repeat the question too, Chris.
Oh, yeah.
On the 3020, are you using fiber channel or mixing it up?
Yeah. Question is, are we using fiber channel across the board on the 3020s? Yeah, it's all fiber channel.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do you synchronize the snapshots on the ESX snapshots? Is the ESX server in a consistent state when you snapshot?
The virtual machines are in a crash consistent state. So it's just like they had a hard power down. When you bring them up on the remote site, you're going to go through a check disk. That's one reason why we haven't rushed the Oracle system's over, because we're waiting for that Snap Mirror client.
Yeah, we don't use the VMware Snap or anything like that as far as QSing the data. It's all through the actual operating system.
Based on the warm site, then you don't have any tape backup or any
other form of... There's tape backup at the warm site.
Yeah.
Okay, my question would be, what is the change in your backup strategy when you introduce RDNs on the VM?
What, the question is, what's the change on the backup strategy once we introduce RDMs?
None.
Doesn't really change it at all. I mean, they have a very robust backup process, traditional backup model running right now. And so we haven't found that we needed to change much on the process at all, in fact.
Okay.
So I'll go over to this side of the room here, way in the back. Because booting from SAN is mutually exclusive with a couple other features like raw device mappings, and we knew we would need RDMs, and so boot from SAN was pretty much out of play. So, I mean, I love the idea of being able to do it, but it just was not suitable in this case. So, and actually, I'll just let you know, the scripting that we use to back up those VMX files is actually based on the VM Snap and VM Res scripts. So the capability is in the product right now. Registering the VMs on the DR site was done automatically by script? No, it's part of our failover process. So it's document.
Yeah, the VMX files are there. They're copied over to the Zest recovery site, but it is a process where now that's something that you could script if you wanted to fail over an entire data center. Yeah, you could script that.
Yep.
No, yeah, if I could take that one, Chris. One of the things that, as Chris alluded to, is we're right now we have SQL and Oracle. One of the things that we are looking forward to is testing out that Snap Manager for VMs and seeing if that will resolve that specific issue without having to do a lot of scripting at this time. So we had fixed time to be able to put the solution in, but that is one of the things that we'd look at doing.
So currently you have nothing, maybe what are you doing to make
I'm sorry?
What did you do to this moment?
Right now, it's the network appliance that is actually doing the snap mirror. That's the only thing that's actually doing. So you're actually just getting crash consistent copies of virtual machines over at the location. With fiber channel, and you can't actually, it doesn't actually work with virtual machines when you have that there. If you had actually a physical device, you could, but with a virtual machine, you can't, and that's why we're actually waiting for this one product that will allow us to do that.
Are you backing up the actual AMDK since you're having them in a crash consistent state? Do you worry about OS corruption since
no.
Typical of crash consistent?
No.
It's not something we've seen. I guess we're lucky. Oh yeah, there still is.
Yeah, the virtual machines themselves are backed up by an agent inside the virtual machine, as well as the replication across. So it's kind of overkill when you start going on how many backups do I want here?
This is an issue I've typically seen more in the NT4 and Windows 2000 days. I haven't run into it a lot under Server 2003.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you do your scenario where the VR side you are VIPing the box, would you have problems?
Check disk?
Oh, he's asking about VIPing Exchange servers, proven to have some issues apparently. Not something we've seen?
No, I haven't seen anything like that.
Yeah.
Back at the back room there?
Excellent. Thank you.
Any other questions? Orange shirt back there. Are we hitting the maximum VMFS volumes? No. How many? We actually created. We only have two hosts here, and we had how many silver? I think we're up to about 40 gold and silver. So we're actually controlling that. And that was one of the considerations that we did talk about with respect to going to a virtual machine per volume, but we're about maybe half, 50% of that maximum for the 2.5, and I think with the ESX 3...
Once we go to 3, we've got a lot more headroom as well.
Yeah. Matt, the question is what is the, how do we deal with the maximum snap mirror relationship? You're talking about just with respect to bandwidth, or? We're hitting, right now we have, I'd say about 20, so we haven't actually seen that. And I think what we would be looking at doing as well, and we've actually moved things over as well, so we have two filers. We have a gold and that silver as well, that silver/bronze. So we could actually, our gold is all on one, our silver is on the other. So if that situation is or ever does come up, we could be looking at moving systems around. So we're not really losing our investment as to what we've put in. It is in the cluster, yes. It's an active cluster. So we can actually use each filer. Each filer is driving the disk underneath it. Yeah, this is the one thing that you do have to look at when you are first setting up the snap mirror, because you have to really know the change rate of the virtual machine. So that's one thing that we did experiment with. We did, as this was a new solution as well, we were able to experiment which ones we needed to make sure we had reservations on, which ones we could get away with, which ones we could change a percentage of how much disk space we reserved, etc. So it's really specific to the virtual machine.
So we're getting the signal here, I think, to wrap it up. If you guys want to come up and talk to us, sure, we'll be around. We're here. I'm actually here for a couple more days. So thank you very much.
Thanks, everyone.
face elevation you used for?
How much the percentage of this space?
We started with 50% reservation, and then we worked our way down. So most of our virtual machines are about 30%. Okay, most of our virtual machines are about